And my mother will not be here today because she had the opinion have been last night of her seventh great grandchild. So she's up north. No, this was for the other side of the family. I'm kidding.
What's next week?
Next week there's no class. That's what you need to know. Let's begin. We'll have a class about Pesach today. But not about chametz, and not about cleaning, and not about these things. Because I found over the years that when rabbis get up and say, it's not so bad, and this you don't have to do, and that you have to do, it just makes things worse. So we'll talk about this. We'll talk about the Seder instead. So, we'll read from the Haggadah, which is in source number one. Mozgin kos sheni, you pour the second cup of wine. You pour the second cup. Vikan haben shoel, and here the son asks. What does the son ask? Well, that's pretty obvious what the son asks. That's the next line in the Haggadah. The son asks, Manishtana halayla zemikol leilot. How is this night different? Or Rabbi Soloveitchik, one suggestion should be, how different is this night? How is this night different from all other nights? Shebekol halaylot anu ochlim chametz u'matzah, halayla zekulo matzah. So the first question is around matzah. Second question, shebekol halaylot anu ochlim shayirakot, halayla zekulo or moror. So the second question goes around moror. Third question, other nights we don't dip even one time. Tonight, twice. Fourth, normally we eat whether while sitting or reclining. Everyone is reclining. So how many questions are there? Four. Of course there's four because that's easy because everything in the Haggadah, we know that the right answer is four except for... Yeah, God is one. God is one, then you have to remember that that answer is one. Okay? And a bunch of other things at the end. But four seems to be a theme. So this part of the Haggadah is lifted almost, and I stress almost, word for word from the Mishnah. So let's take a look at the Mishnah in source number two. Mazgu lo kos sheni. Does that sound familiar? V'kan haben shoel aviv. And here the son asks his father. But if the son doesn't know, doesn't have enough wisdom, of Malamdo, then his father will teach him. Now, what should the son ask the father at this point? About the wine. Right? Why are we pouring a second cup of wine? Meaning, that would be the logical question right now. We made Kiddush, we mumbled a couple things, maybe sang a couple things, and then the norm, what should happen? Well, right, so we have the vegetables, the dipping, the washing, but over here we pour the second cup. When we pour the second cup, that's already an indication that things are different, and over here, the son should ask. Now, if you read this Mishnah, and I didn't know anything else, I would have thought that what the son should ask should be the question about the wine. But that seems to be just my understanding of the mission, or maybe at least one other person's, as we'll see. Let me ask you a different question. Let's ignore that previous point for a moment. Later on in the Haggadah, we're going to find a topology of four different sons. Four different sons have different kinds of questions, or I'll put it a little differently, we have different educational objectives regarding the four different types of children. Which one of the four children asked this question, the Manishtana? Is this a hard or is this an easy question? Which one of the four would have asked the Manishtana?
Four questions, four sons.
Let's say it's one. Let's say it's one asking. Who do you say? So you're good, good. So we eliminate Sheinu De'Elishol because he doesn't ask anything. Good. So now we're down to three possibilities. So now we're left to the wise son, the wicked son, or the simple son. So are these questions that a simple son would ask?
No.
So therefore, we've just now eliminated the wicked, the simple son, and now we're left to two possibilities. What? No, but these questions in the Manishtana are more sophisticated questions, and they're questions which assume a certain level of knowledge, because some of the things that he's talking about haven't even happened yet. So the simple son, and we know what, we'll read the sons as we go on, it wouldn't be the simple son, which therefore leads us to two possibilities. One possibility is that it's the wise son, and the other possibility, it's the wicked son. So
it depends on the intonation.
Okay.
The question could be asked, good.
Good. Very good, very good. So it depends how it's asked. The way that we normally read it, the way that we normally understand these questions have been asked, which son would it be? It would end up being the wise son. And I'll prove it to you, by the way. I'll prove to you that it's the wise son beyond any shadow of a doubt a little bit later, but I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. If we look in... Let's go again. Let's continue the Mishnah now. And let's see the questions of the Mishnah. Manishtana halayla zemikol leilo, chibakolet anu ochlim chameitu matzah, layla zekulo matzah. Which sounds like the same question we saw before. Tonight, we're eating matzah. Other nights, we eat bread or matzah. Second question. Chibakol halaylot anu ochlim shar yukor, layla zemoror. And all other nights, we eat all kinds of vegetables. Tonight, we eat mor. You like that question? It also seems pretty much the same. Third question. Shebekol leilat anu ochlim basar, tzali, shaluk, umivushal, halayla hazeh, kulo tzli. On other nights we eat meat, be it roasted, shaluk would be, I think, braised or cooked, umivushal cooked. Tonight we eat only roasted. Now, halayla hazeh, kulo tzli. Tonight we only eat roasted. So this question, you may or may not be familiar with. I don't want to imply that any of you are that old, that remember the Beis HaMikdash when they were still eating the Korban Pesach. But over here we do have a question which you correctly point out. Today we tend to have a custom not to eat anything which is roasted. And at that time they would eat the Korban Pesach, which was exclusively roasted. So the question really comes up, a question about the Korban Pesach. Now you can all guess, and this will be a very simple guess, why this question is not within your copy of the Haggadah. I mean, maybe you want to bring it back to the store and say there's a question missing over here. But let's continue in the Mishnah. Shabakol leilot anu marvilim pam achad, halayla zeh shtei pamim.
Is that a typo?
No.
That's
the Mishnah. That's the Mishnah. That's what the Mishnah says. On other nights we dip one time and tonight two times. And we'll stop right now with the continuation of the Mishnah, but we will come back to it soon. Now the Mishnah has made it to us in more than one version, which means we have the normal quote-unquote Gemara, which is known as the Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, but we also have the Jerusalem Talmud. Normally, the Jerusalem Talmud and the Babylonian Talmud are pretty similar. I mean, little spellings every now and again, because there's different dialect. The thing was said verbally, so sometimes the words would have been written indicated in different dialect. But there are differences. There are some changes, and some of these things are quite interesting. Have you ever heard of Rabbi Schechter from YU, or Herschel Schechter? His father wrote a doctorate on the differences between the Babylonian and the Jerusalem Talmud's Mishnah, between the two, which I happen to have a copy of this at home because I got it from him, from Rabbi Schechter's father. Later on, Professor Epstein from Hebrew University did a much more intensive work on it, but there's enough for people to written books on the differences. Well, let's take a look over here, because here we will find a difference. Source number three, Mazgulo Kosheni, Vekana Ben Shoal. They pour the third cup, and here the son asks. You notice already that's different, right? They call the second cup, and here the son asks. In the Avli's Mishnah, it said Shoal Aviv, Kama ben Shoal, Im Ein Dat Beben, L'Shoal, Aviv Malamdo. So again, you see that there are little nuances which are different between the two, but let's take a look at the questions. First question, Manishtan Alayla Zemikol Lelod. How is this night different from all other nights? I don't know how I missed that one. How is this night different from all other nights? Shebekol Lelot Anu Matbilim Pamachad V'Layla Zeh Shtei Pa'amim. First question is with regards to the dipping. Second question, Shebekol Lelot Anu Ochlim Chameitzu Matzah Halayla Hazeh Kulo Matzah. Third question, Shebekol Lelot Anu Ochlim Basar Tzli Shlukum V'Vushal Halayla Zeh Kulo Tzli. So one thing that you may note here is the order's difference, and there are only three questions. By the way, which question is neither in the Bavli nor in the Yerushalmi? Misubim. The question about Misubim is not in either one of those sources. So by the way, now if you add, how many questions do we have altogether? We have five questions altogether. The Yerushalmi has three questions. The Bavli has four questions, but altogether we do have five questions. Take a look at the Rambam in source number five. It's good. They shouldn't. They shouldn't. Right. They shouldn't count it as a question. Shebekol Halelot. Because that introduces the next. If you take a look at the Rambam in source number five, in the Rambam's instructions to the Haggadah, he writes, Matchil Umavarech. He begins and he makes the bracha, borei pri hadama, v'lokeach yerek, u'matpil oto b'charoset, v'ochel kezayit, hu v'kol ha'misubim imo, kol achad v'chad, ein ochlim pachot mekezayit. By the way, our custom is to eat less than a kezayit. His custom was to eat a kezayit. You can give a whole shir on the Seder night and the laws of brachot. We're not going to do that. But for the same reason that somebody would avoid eating kezayit would be the exact same reason why someone would want to eat a kezayit, because in order to go the other way in terms of brachot.
And also, we don't dip it into charoset, we dip it into
correct. V'achar kach okrin hashulchan. At this point, you take away the table. Now, and again, I want you to imagine that you're someplace in the Middle East, which I guess we are, and you're laying down around the table. And they would give, you know, like breakfast in bed kind of tables. Each person would have a little table in front of them that they would bring the food on, a tray. So it says now, Okrin hashulchan b'vnei korei hagadah levado. They would take away the table from the person who's reading the Haggadah. Umozgin kos hasheni. And pour the second cup. Now, by the way, you realize that the Rambam is actually not, I don't know, they say he was a pretty good doctor, but he seems to be a pretty good educator as well, because he's taking all the stuff over here and really showing us why someone would be asking questions at this point. Why so? Because we're doing this thing in terms of the dipping at that point, which is not the normal time of the meal as well. We're not washing for the motzi, which we should have been doing at that point. Taking away the table when the meal, meaning right now you would have expected the main course to be there, but the table gets taken away, and instead of that, we pour the cup of wine. So you just now had three different things which were out of the ordinary, and the Rambam is being very careful by telling us these things. But by the way, if that's the case, so what questions really should be asked? Not just why are we pouring the second cup of wine. What other questions should be asked? Why are you taking the table away? Why aren't we eating? Why are we dipping? Which means all these questions now should have occurred to this person now, because those are all the things we've done to make the night different. And then he continues and he says, pours the cup, v'kan haben shoel. And over here the son asks. Now, what does the son ask? The Rambam doesn't say. But then he says, v'omer hakore, and the person who reads the Haggadah, what does he say? Manishtana halayla zeh mikol halaylot. So the Rambam seems to be stressing that the person who asks the Manishtana is not the child or children, youngest to oldest or whatever order you want. But the Manishtana has a completely different function, and I will explain more in a moment. But let's first look what questions the Rambam has. Manishtana lai mikol leilot, shebekol leilot ein anu matpilim afilu pam echad. Logically, why would that be the first question? Because that was the first strange thing that happened. So how many questions did the Rambam end up with over here? He ends up with five questions, which means he took all five. You're no longer surprised why he has all five, because we've seen that altogether there are, in fact, five questions. Now, he does tell us something which you all now know, that the question about the Korban Pesach was inappropriate to be asked after there was no longer a Beit HaMikdash, and that question fell into disuse. And now, then we have four questions, but according to this, we have four questions by default, not by plan. In source number six, the Rambam writes, in his introduction, Nusach HaHagadah Shenahugu Bo Yisrael Bizman HaGalut Kachu. Here is the Haggadah that we say during the exile. Now, why should Haggadah be different in the exile? So you know. I mean, there'll be a couple things that will be different, but here, obviously, this will be one of them. And which question do you want to guess he leaves out when he gives his questions? He leaves out the one about the Korban Pesach, which is very obvious to us, because all of us to do the same thing. Now, can some one of you tell me why, according to the Rambam, it is the Korei of the Haggadah who reads it? One answer which is given is that the Korei is the master of ceremonies, and he has an obligation of reading every single word in the Haggadah. That's a yeshivish type of answer. It's as if he's the Shliach Tzibur, and as Shliach Tzibur, he has to read the whole thing. I suspect that in a lot of your seders, or sedarim, if you really want to speak Hebrew, that doesn't happen. And what probably happens instead is you have somebody leading, but you have different people reading different parts. And is there some kind of thing that one person must read it? It's, as I said, I don't recall seeing anybody saying that clearly it must, but there are those who understand from that Rambam, why should the Korei have to read the Manishtana? So they would understand then that the kid asked the question, but the kid isn't leading the Seder. So now the person who leads the Seder has to say the questions as well, because it's part of the Haggadah. I don't like that answer. Now I'm going to ask you again. Why does the Rambam say that the Korei is the one who says the Manishtana and not the kid?
Maybe because the content is such that he would know that those are the questions that are supposed to be asked. The kid is maybe asking.
So you just gave up even on the Ben Chacham.
Yeah. Well, the Ben Chacham is not the leader of the Seder.
But it says, now the kid asks, so he's asking something right now.
He's asking something, but maybe not those questions.
Right, so the kid is asking something right now, so why shouldn't the kid ask these questions, yeah. So, let's go back and look at the words of the Mishnah again. Yeah?
Number five, when I wonder, why does he say about the Korban Pesach, about the Tzali, there is no Korban Pesach
in. He's telling you what it was. This is what one... In the law, he tells you what the questions should be. When he gives you his Nusach of the Haggadah, in the next halacha, by the way,
yeah,
that's Perik... One second. That's Perik Chet. I didn't write what halacha it is. The next halacha, which I didn't, you don't have on your sources, I'm reading to you. Bizman hazeh she'ein sham korban pesach. He says this a couple of times, and he changes it. Let me get to the four questions.
So he explains that he was referring here only to Bizman Shabbat
Mikdash. Bizman hazeh einu omer v'halayla zeh kulo kli she'ein lenu korban. So the Rambam says that very clearly. There he's telling you what the law is. I mean, the Rambam also has a whole book about korbanot. Why does he have the book? Because he's writing about... It's interesting. He's writing his book for what will be in the third Beit HaMikdash. That seems to be what his agenda is in terms of the entire book. Right. So let's go back to the Mishnah, source number two, and tell me why the Rambam decided that it was the Korei who's the one who's asking these questions.
Let's read.
V'im yesh dat b'ben. And what does the ben ask? Which questions? Which means, this, okay, good. Let's read it again. Pour the second cup, source two. Mazgu lo kos sheni. V'kan ha-ben shoal aviv. And here the son asks his father. Vim ein dat baben aviv melamdo. And if the son doesn't know that his father teaches him, manishtan alei lezeh mikol leilot. Now, when it said before that here the son asks, there are two possibilities. One possibility is, which you're all pre-programmed to, which is the son would ask the manishtana. And if the son doesn't know the manishtana, then the father asks the manishtana. What's the other possibility? That the son asks
better questions.
That at this point the son asks. Now, why do we care if the son is asking? Apparently, the Seder must be conducted in a question and answer format, which means this is a teach. When you used to teach, you would do this? You would ask questions?
All the time.
This is a way of teaching. It's a way of teaching which the Seder is based on. It has to be based on a question and answer session. We'll see to what extent this is true as we move on. A good teacher gets the kid to ask the question.
You lead him towards the answer.
You also lead them to the question. Because once it's that person's question, then they are actively involved instead of passively involved. The worst type of education is passive education. I mean, look at you. No, I'm kidding. But the worst type of education is when people are sitting around listening to somebody speak. The best type of education is when the person is involved. If the person asks the question, they just now became emotionally involved in what's going on in the class, and then it's that much easier to hold on to them that whole class. Somebody asks one good question, they're with you. Then they're with you, which means, yes, you want to get them to give the answers as well, but if you can get them to ask the questions, even better. But reading this Mishnah, are we convinced that the son has to ask these four, three, or five questions? It's not so simple. A matter of fact, it would have been far more logical, even for the wise son, to have been asking other questions at this point, namely about the wine and about the dipping and why are you taking away the food and why aren't we eating it and what's going on right now? I mean, there were other questions to ask, and everything we're doing at this point is to get them to ask those other questions and not necessarily these questions. So now, who was the manishtana for then? I'll back down from this soon. Who's the manishtana for the kid who doesn't know how to ask? So which of the four sons is the manishtana for? She'en al day l'shol. The one who doesn't know how to ask, this is what we teach him to ask. So again, we right away got rid of the ein al day l'shol, the one who doesn't know how to ask. Why? Because he's obviously not asking. But that's exactly what the Mishnah says. Shall I read the words again to you? You pour the second cup, and here the son asks the father, Vim ein dat baben. If the son doesn't know how, aviv malamdo, then his father teaches him, manishtan alayla zemikol leilot. So this seems to be the Mishnah's way of dealing with the son, with the child, she'enol yideo l'shol, who doesn't know how to ask. What do you do? You teach him the questions. You know what I'm saying? To say that this is the ben she'en l'yedei l'shol is very, very easy, because that's really the words of the Mishnah. As I told you, Rabbi Soloveitchik liked to say that this is the Chacham. This is the Chacham, because he said, by process of elimination, the one who doesn't ask, he's not asking. The one who's the Tam, he would ask not such a sophisticated question. The one who's a Rasha, he really doesn't care that much about what we're doing, and these questions seem to be somebody who's involved. And by process of elimination, it leaves us with the wise son. The only problem is that according to the text of the Mishnah and the way that the Rambam understood the Mishnah, that's not so simple. On the other hand, the Gemara understood the Mishnah not in line with what I just now said, but the Gemara understood the Mishnah a little differently. And let's take a look at source number four. You were right before. It's not provocative questions. It's the tone of voice. It's how he says.
Yeah, but in the tone of voice, like zigzag, kind of mocking it, you know, making fun of it or whatever.
Look at source number four, Gemara. This is the Gemara on that Mishnah. Tana Rabbanan. Our rabbis asked, Chacham bino, if the son is wise, show alo. Then the son asks. Which means over here, remember I told you which are the four sons? What does it say here? The Chacham. If it's the wise son, then he asks. Vim eino Chacham, ishto sha'alto. Then the wife should ask. Vim lav, Hu sho'el la'atzmo, which means, remember I told you that the idea of questions and answers is so important for the night that the proper thing is to educate the children. If the child is wise, the child will ask, which means if not, then he'll ask himself. Now, what will he ask, or what should they be asking? The implication of this passage is, let's continue, v'yafilu shnei talmidei chachamim sheyodim b'hilchot ha-pesach, sho'elin ze et ze. They will ask one another. What will they ask? Manishtana leila ze mikol leilot shebekol leilot, and so on. Which means that these questions seem to be part of the formula of the Seder night, and the implication of this passage is that that's what the wise son would ask. As I said, that's not necessarily the implication of the Mishnah, but it is the way that this line of the Gemara, at least the way that I understand it, would interpret the Mishnah, that it's, and here it says clearly, that the Ben Chacham would be the one asking these questions. But again, I'll point out, and if the Ben Chacham doesn't know to ask these questions, then the Mishnah said the father should be teaching him to ask these questions. And now we're down to the Chacham or the Shein Eli Lishol. And of course, you can say as well, it's the Tam who doesn't know to ask these questions. These are the questions we should be teaching them. Yes?
Can you have Seder by yourself
then? Yeah, but you have to ask yourself the questions.
You have to ask
the questions and give the answers. That's the whole point here. It says that the Seder, even by oneself, should still be done in a question and answer format. So as I said, that comes out real clearly from this passage. What word was the most interesting word in that whole passage I just now read? I'll read it again. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Chacham b'no sho'alo, if the son is wise, he asks. Vim einu chacham, if he's not wise, ishto sho'alto, then his wife should ask him. Vim lav hu sho'ala atzmo, if not, then he should ask himself. V'yafilu shnei tamidei chachamim, sheyodin be'ochad ha-pesach, even two sages who know the laws of Pesach, sho'alim ze et ze, they should ask one another. Manish tan alay lezeh mikol leilot, how different this night is, or why is this night different from all the nights? Shebekol leilot anu matvilin pam achad, alay lezeh shtei pamim. And all nights we dip one time tonight, two times. By the way, that's where the Gemara ends. It doesn't go to the other questions. It could be that the Gemara is saying dot, 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 but it doesn't say it. So you can do with that as you wish. What was the most interesting word? Which word? Afilu. What else? There's one word that was very interesting. Why is she so interesting? She's there. She's participating. I forgot at the beginning to say that today's shir is in memory of your mother, Elisha Bat Shneer Zalman Besara. See? Women are here. No, the women's part of the Seder. The word which was interesting, I guess only to me and to no one else, was the word Hilchot HaPesach. The word Halacha, even if they're well-versed in the laws of Pesach. Why are we talking about the laws of Pesach? I mean, what's the main thing about the Seder night? Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, right? Let's take a look back in the first source, which is our Haggadah. We have the four questions, and after the four questions, we have a line that we all get. This is a singing part. Avodim hayinu l'parav Mitzrayim, votzin Hashem l'keinu misham b'yad chazakah v'zeru unto, yeah, we were slaves to power in Egypt, and God took us out with a strong hand, outstretched arm. Ve'ilu lo hutziyah kodesh baruch hu et avotin Mitzrayim, had God not taken our ancestors out, or anu v'neinu v'neinu mishavodim hayinu l'parav Mitzrayim, we would still be enslaved to power in Egypt. Afilu kolanu chachamim, even if we were all wise, kolanu nivonim, we were all had insight, kolonu zekenim, we were all elders, kolonu yodim et haTorah, we all knew the Torah, mitzvah lin l'saper b'tzi Mitzrayim, it would still be a commandment for us to tell the story of leaving Egypt. V'kol hamar b'l'saper b'tzi Mitzrayim, reiz m'shubach, and whoever spends more time telling the story is to be praised. It then tells us a story. Maaseh b'Rabbi Lezer b'Yishuv, Lezer ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Shehayu Mesubim b'Bnei Brak. These various scholars had the Pesach Seder in B'nei Brak. V'hayu Mesaprim b'Tzi Mitzrayim, Kol Oto Laila, and they were telling the story all night. So why is this story being brought here? In order to strengthen the previous point. What was the previous point? Even great sages, if they know what? The law or the story? if they know the story. Now, why did I say that that was interesting before, that it said even people that know the law? There seems to be a tension between the laws of Pesach versus telling the story of Pesach. If you want to see this tension in another place, take a look on the last page, page 4. Take a look at source number 12. Source number 12 begins, this is the Tosefta, at the very end of Pesachim. It begins with something that you may be familiar with. Ein maftirin achar Pesach afikoman. What does that mean? Okay. So let's understand what this means first. Afikoman means dessert. You're not allowed to eat after the Korban Pesach. You're not allowed to eat dessert, which means the last thing you should be eating during that meal should be the Korban Pesach. You don't eat it when you're really hungry. You eat it rather what's called al hasova. You eat it when you're already, you know, not starving, and then that should be the final thing that you eat. You eat the kazayit of the Korban Pesach, and you're not allowed to eat dessert afterwards. What is the Greek word for dessert? I assume it's Greek. Is afikoman. Now, today we call the piece of matzah that we eat at the end of the meal afikoman. What is afikoman? It means dessert. Why do we eat that piece of matzah at the end of the meal? We eat it lezecher the Korban Pesach. So why don't we just call that piece of matzah the Korban Pesach? Well, that would be somewhat problematic, because there's a law that we're not, bless you, there's a law that we're not all that familiar with or sensitive to, but if you were to designate something as a korban, those words work, which means theoretically, if you went and you said that piece of matzah, this is for the Korban Pesach, or this is for the Pesach, the word Pesach even means, that's what the word means, the korban, this is for Pesach, you may have just now designated this for the Beit HaMikdash. Now, obviously, you can't bring a korban, an offering, out of a piece of matzah, but the value of it would be dedicated to the treasury of the, you just made a donation. You just donated to the treasury of the Beit HaMikdash. There is even a halacha, which this will depend on how obsessive your rabbis were, if they ever told you this one, but this is serious, that if you buy meat for Pesach, you shouldn't say this meat is for Pesach, because by saying this meat is for Pesach, you may just now have designated that meat for the Korban Pesach, for a korban, and you designated that meat as holy. You turned it into a korban. You turned it into kudshim. What? About the korban,
yeah.
But that's for another reason. But I'm saying, if you were to say just plain, let's just say you had a cow and you say this cow is going to be for a korban. So what just now happened to that cow? It became holy, and you have to go and dedicate it to the treasury. So what happens if you say this is for this is for a shlamim? That's a kind of korban. Now you just now had to dedicate it. What if that particular animal can't be used for a shlamim? That gets designated for the treasury. The treasury will then use money, and the money would be bought for shlamim. Again, just as an example, if you say this thing is for a Pesach, the problem is, again, it's not our intention, it's not what we have in mind, I understand all that, but it still says in the Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't do it. It says you should rather say, I'm buying meat for Yontif, I'm buying meat for the holiday, I'm buying meat for, right? But to say, even for a Chag, may technically be a problem, but if you say it's for Pesach, it's a little bit of a problem. Now, let's leave that on the side.
But you go to the store and you say, is this kosher Pesach?
That's fine. Kosher Pesach is okay. And you don't have to ask, it's already kosher. But to ask is fine. To say, I am buying this for Pesach is somewhat of a problem. Now, keeping that in mind, you realize why they never would have called that piece of matzah at the end of the meal the Pesach, because that causes all kinds of halachic problems. What do they call it? They call it the one thing that it's not allowed to be. And what's that? The afikomen. Because what's the law in the Mishnah and the Gemara about afikomen? You're not allowed to eat an afikomen. What's afikomen? It's dessert. Why can't you eat dessert? Because the Korban Pesach has to be last. So as I said, there's like an interesting switch over here, and we called the piece of matzah that took the place of the Korban Pesach, we called it the afikomen, but now when we read the Tosefta in its context, and it'll be very clear to you now, Ein maftir nachar Pesach afikoman, what does that line mean? You're not allowed to eat dessert after the Korban Pesach. Kigon, for example, and here are suggestions for dessert for your holidays. Egozim, tmarim, ukliot. You're not allowed to have any of these kinds of things for dessert. And then it continues and it says, Chayev adam la'asok behilchot ha-pesach kol ha-layla. What word are you now hopefully somewhat sensitive to and have noticed there? A person is obligated to involve themselves in the laws of Pesach all night. Afilu beino levein beino, even if it's just him and his son. Afilu beino levein atzmo, even if he's by himself. Afilu beino levein tamidav, even a person and his students. A person still should be involved in the laws of Pesach. Here we got rid of the woman. Okay. Ma'aseh. B'Rabban Gamliel v'Zekenim shehayu mesubim b'Beit Baitus ben Zunin b'Lud. Once these rabbis got together and they had a seder in Lud, v'hayu oskin b'Hilchot haPesach, and they were involved in the laws of Pesach. Now that you're somewhat, excuse me, correct. Correct. So what's going on over here? Because I just keep showing you sources that talk about laws of Pesach. Can we now go over to these questions again? These questions that were posed in the Manish Tana, are they about Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim or are they about the laws of Pesach? Matter of fact, which laws are they about? Which laws are they referring to?
They're not about the laws. They're about the Sipur
of Egypt. The Manish Tana?
We sit reclined because we're free men. It's all about the story.
So you're saying there's a narrative behind the law, but now again, now tell me what. But again, tell me what the questions are. Obviously, you haven't had to do this in a while.
It is the halacha, but it's based on.
Good. So what are these questions? Matter of fact, the first question is about matzah. The second one is about morer. The third one is about dipping.
It's all about the fourth.
Sorry. In the Mishnah. Let's look at the ones in the Mishnah. First one is about matzah, the second one's about mor, and the third one's about the Korban Pesach. Now let's continue the Mishnah. We go back into the Mishnah and continue it. In source 2, L'fi dato sheben avim melamdo, matchil b'gnut u'masayim b'shevach, which is Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, without any question. You start about the bad things, you move over to the praise. Vidorish mi arami ovid ovi ad sheigma kol haparsha kula, and you say the various drashot on that section. Rabbi Gamliel haya omer, kol shelo omer, shlosh dvarim elu b'pesach, lo yotza yidecha v'tova elohein pesach matzah umorar. Rabbi Gamliel says, but the minimum that you have to say is about these three things. Which three things? Pesach matzah umorar. Did you notice those three things? They're the first three questions. Which means when you look at the Mishnah as an organic whole, what do you now notice? That Rabbi Gamliel is now commenting on the earlier strata of the Mishnah. Right? Do we see that? The earlier strata says, if the kid asks, good. If not, then this is what the father should teach him. Why is the father teaching him these questions? Because these questions center around which three things? Pesach, Matzah, Umorah. Then we're told, and what should the Seder be about? Well, the Seder, you should go and you should talk about these various things, Matchil Bignut, Masayim Beshevach, go on to say, you should tell the whole story of Rabbi David Avi, all those drashot, which is really the whole text of the whole Haggadah, all those drashot that we have. What does Rabbi Gamliel come back and say? Well, that's very nice if you're telling stories, but what do you have to do as the minimum? The minimum, which is very interesting, the minimum fulfillment of which obligation? The minimum obligation, according to Rabbi Gamliel, of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is telling the halachot of Pesach Matzah Umorah. Which again, as far as I can tell, when you look at this now as a whole, you realize that Rabbi Gamliel is responding back to the Manish Tana and saying this is the minimum. By the way, the Mishnah Brura has an interesting comment. If you look in source 14 and 15. For those of you who like to have a slow, deliberate Seder explaining every single point and every single question and every single thing, he's commenting on the words, Shemitzvah lemaher v'le'echol. There is a mitzvah to eat. You know, it is Chag, by the way, it is Yom Tov, and there's a mitzvah to have a meal as well, and not just to. I do know of people who they go and they say the whole thing, and then they look at the quash, oh, we have to eat the afikoman already, and then the whole meal is sitting there. And we have to do it. I spoke about once how serious the chatzot issue is. We won't speak about that. But Mishnah Berurah explains, Ratzel Omer, Lizarez Lasot HaSeder, you have to hurry up and do the Seder, Kidei Shelo Yishnu HaTinokot, that the kids don't fall asleep, Kishiyidu Shelo Yishtehe Harbei Ada Achila, and therefore you shouldn't spend a lot of time till the meal. Mameli Yishalu Manishtana V'Yishivlim, and therefore they'll ask the Manishtana, and you'll answer them, V'Yikayim HaShekatu V'Yigadat L'Vincha B'Yomahu, and you'll fulfill the mitzvah of the night. What is the mitzvah of the night? The mitzvah is Haggadah. Where do we see that word in a pasuk? V'higadat alavincha b'yomahu. So the mitzvah is to tell your kids. What do you have to tell your kids? Continue to the next source, the Mishnah Berurah, which will be much clearer. Here it's on the point where the kids ask, you pour the second cup, and the kids ask. Meaning, here's the Mishnah Berurah on that same point that we've been looking at all class. V'yishalu, ratzalomu sha'ayidei ze yit'oru lasum lev al kol shinuyim. That the kids hopefully will ask, they will have noticed all the changes that have taken place that night. Which changes? Which the dipping and moving the table and pouring the second cup. Umin hagei laila zeh, and all the customs of this night. Vishalu she'elot hamivu arim b'nusach manishtana. And which question will the kid ask? So now he is being traditional and he's going back and says, he'll ask the questions in the nusach of the manishtana. Uvishas ita kadei shelo yishnu vishalu. And the Gemara says the reason you want to speed it up so the kids don't fall asleep and they ask questions generally. V'tzorech la'orurama, you need to wake them up. Shelo yishanu, that they don't fall asleep, ad achar, until after avadim hayinu, until the kids at least hear avadim hayinu. So what is the Mishnah Berurah telling you is the minimum that the kid needs to hear? Well, the minimum is they need to ask the manishtana, and the minimum they need to hear is the avadim hayinu, which, by the way, this seems to be very blatantly against Rabbi Gamliel, because Rabbi Gamliel, unless you want to say that in even the asking of the manishtana, right, then you've mentioned it, but you haven't explained it. He's saying they need to be awake to Avinu, Shiyadu Inyan Yitziyat Mitzrayim, that they should know at least the basic storyline of leaving Egypt. The Ikar HaMitzvahu, the main mitzvah of the night, Hatshuva Al Sheilot Bino, is to answer the kid's question. Ukamoshinemar, as the verse says, Vigadat Levin Chabiyamahu, Lemor Bavur Zeh, and so on. Because of this, God took us out. And then he writes in parentheses, "V'lo kimosha osin eza hamon," and not like the masses tend to do. Sha'achar amirat manishtana, that after the kid asked the manishtana, "Minichim li ladim lelech lishon," the kid performed, and then you let the kid go to sleep. Ve'eni yodim shum tshuvah she'elatam, they never heard the answer. So he's just stressing over here that it's very nice that the kid asked the manishtana, but what's the main thing as far as he's concerned? The avadim ayinu is the main thing. Let them hear at least that. Yes.
The second half
is not part of the story. It's hallel, it's praise.
Okay.
The main thing, the, I mean,
but
praise.
Part of the
right, but the thing about the praise is we should feel the praise and say the praise. I would say that it's probably less of an obligation of Haggadah as far as the praise goes. The main obligation of Haggadah is what he just now told you, is to tell him the storyline of having left Egypt, and that is Avadim Hayinu. And that I hope becomes clear now. What did Rabbi Gamliel say? Is that it should be about at least these three things. But by the way, we may now note our tension between the laws of Pesach that Rabbi Gamliel is pointing at and the Sipur, which is what the Mishnah Berurah is telling us over here. And the differences between the two are most likely because of a very simple thing. During the time when the Korban Pesach was around, I'm pretty sure that they focused on halachot ha-Pesach. And it's true that you can't really separate the halachot from the story. But let's think about this. We use a lot of audiovisual aids. And as far as keeping kids awake, that's probably the wisest thing to do is to use more audiovisual aids. My kids were really little. Like by hail, we would throw ping pong balls on the table and went and bought a whole bunch of toy frogs and, you know, toy frogs and don't ask about the blood and that they'd normally provided by themselves. But we would do various things in order to, again, even if it wasn't written in the instructions of the Haggadah, in order to keep the younger children awake.
Keep the wife awake.
Keep the wife awake. I'd also give candies out. If you have a good question, you get a candy. So that normally kept even the older children involved as well. But I think that there may have been a tension between that when you had the Korban Pesach, I mean, what better visual aid do you need than the Korban Pesach right over there? But then that really probably became the center of the story. And when that was around, then things would go around. And by the way, there's a lot of laws you needed to know as well, which means this thing about the laws, and that's the Hilchot Pesach, the things about the laws, that becomes, again, part of the narrative which took place. But I want to point out, again, one more thing, maybe a little more, to really appreciate some of this whole context that we're not seeing yet. If you look at source number 11, you have the earliest version of the four sons. Nimtzeit, this is from the Mechilta. Nimtzeit Omer will end up finding out. Arba banim heim. There are four sons. Echad chacham ve'echad rasha ve'echad tam ve'echad she'enu yidei l'shol. One is wise, one is wicked, one is simple, and one doesn't know how to ask. Chacham mahu omer. What does the wise son say? Ma ha'idut v'chukim v'mishpatim. What are these testimonies, statutes, and laws? Asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu otanu, which the Lord our God has commanded us. Afata pitach lo behilchot ha'pesach. Ein maftir nachar pesach afikoman. Now, the Mechilta is slightly different from our Haggadah. So why do we say etchem and why does he say otanu?
Good. Why he says otanu then?
Which one is in the Torah? This was 50-50. In the Torah it says etchem. If you look at the source in the Chumash, it's source number 9. Ki yishalcha b'cha mochar lemor, if your son will ask you in the future, ma ha'idut v'achukim v'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem l'keinu etchem, if your kids will ask in the future, what are these statutes and testimonies and laws which the Lord our God has commanded you? The Mechilta quotes it, and it changes the word etchem to otanu, which means really that it's not quoting, but it's paraphrasing, or it's interpreting. Because it could be that the Torah is telling you what the kid's going to say. So when the kid says it, he says otanu. But when you say he's going to ask you, so then it becomes etchem. Did that make any sense?
No.
But did it make sense?
Not totally.
Okay, that's what David Zvi Hoffman suggested on this text. There's a little thing that maybe you need to know. It's not impossible to have different versions of text regarding the Chumash. There are different manuscripts that can have differences in terms of letters and even words. It's possible. But when that does take place, then there's textual evidence in terms of the manuscripts. This is an example where there is no question among the manuscripts that there's a different word. We know the word. What's the right word here? Etchem. That's the right word. But in the Mechilta, and just to make you happy, if you look at source number 10 in the Yerushalmi, the Yerushalmi also is the second oldest version of it. It also says Otanu. The manuscripts of the Rambam, the Yemenite manuscripts of the Rambam, also said Otanu. But what happened is that all these things got fixed later on. Why did they get fixed? Because people assumed that was a mistake. Because what does it say? It says Etchem. But what did the wise son say? The wise son says Otanu. That's what he's saying. Now, what makes this the question? Maren, you opening up the pasuk there in Devarim? No, look in Devarim. If you look in Devarim, and you look at the question of the wise son, not what I quoted for you here. Before this, you read the whole speech leading up to this point, there's absolutely nothing about Pesach as far as this question is concerned. It's rather when the Jews are going to get to the land of Israel, don't do Avodah Zarah, and don't do these practices, don't do those practices, follow the word of God, you should do the right thing. Nothing about leaving Egypt, nothing about Pesach, nothing about the Seder. And when you're going to get to the land of Israel, what's your kid going to ask you? Why are we doing all these things that Moshe is reminding the people that you need to do? So what is the kid going to ask? Why are we Jewish? What are all these laws about? What is the answer that the Torah gives to that question in Sefer Devarim, in source number 9? It's a very interesting answer, which you all know. V'amarta levincha, what should you tell your kid as far as why are we Jewish? What's the answer? Avadim hayinu l'paro b'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Paro in Egypt. Now, first of all, this is interesting because the question becomes a question related to Pesach only because of the answer. Nonetheless, this question was cut out of context, put into the Haggadah, put into this teaching about four sons, and said this is the question of a wise son. The truth is he's questioning a lot more than the wicked son questions. He only questions the Korban Pesach. He's questioning all of Judaism. And the answer we give him, why are we Jewish today? We're Jewish today because God took us out of Egypt. When I had to explain this to my students this week, I said to them, this kind of answer is, I said, what happens if I would offer you $10,000 a day, give you $70,000 each week, would you take it? So what answer do they give? Okay, what's the catch? I said, okay, the catch is as follows. One day a week you give me $10,000 back. That's the catch. Would you do it? You wouldn't do it. I don't know. She's shaking her head now. She's scared. I give you $10,000 a day, $70,000, but I want $10,000 back. That's it. That's the whole thing. So basically, that's what God did. God gives us 7 days of the week and says, I want one day back. And that's why we keep Shabbos. Again, that's what I explained to them, which means why over here in this context, why are we doing all these things? Because we live in the land of Israel. We have freedom because God gave us this land. But God asked us for certain things, which is the answer over here of why keep mitzvot is an answer because God took us out of Egypt. And therefore, God is asking us for a couple of things in return, so we do those things in return. And when I say it on a monetary level, it becomes much easier. What's the catch? The catch is you have to keep Shabbat. I'm giving you 6 days of the week. I want one day of the week back. That's the catch.
Why is that a reason?
Why is that a reason? Again, look, if a person accepts that God created and God gave us life, and then it becomes a reason. If a person questions if God even gave us life, then it's something else. But if you accept that God created you and God gave you...
Not even gratitude.
God gave you 6 days of the week, and he's saying, I want one day back. Okay. Why does he want one day back? Okay, that's another discussion. But I just want to show that the question of the wise son and the answer to the wise son is the question has nothing to do with Pesach. The answer then, well, God took us out of Egypt, and that's why we do all of these mitzvot. But now, what's interesting here, the question is about law, halachot, and what is the answer in the Chumash? The answer is Sipritim Mitzrayim. What happens when this makes it into the story of the four sons? The question then is about law, and now within the Pesach night, it's like all the laws of Pesach. And how did the answer get switched? No, the answer to the wise son is in the Chumash. What's the answer? Avadim ayinu l'par Mitzrayim, which the answer is Sipur Yitziyat Mitzrayim. The answer in the Haggadah, or in the four sons, is, At pitach, again, I want you to read the words of the Mechilta. At pitach lo behilchot ha-Pesach, that word patach is not there in your Haggadah. What is the word patach is by the Lejein Lishol. And then people have all kinds of interpretations why it's patach. You have an organization called patach. The word patach is here by the Chacham. What does the word patach mean? Opening, the starting, the beginning. You teach him the laws of Pesach. The Vilna Gaon added into his text here a word which he felt should be understood from this. Ad. You teach him the laws of Pesach. Ad. Ein maftir achar Pesach afi koman. Which therefore means you teach him all the laws of Pesach from the beginning to the end. Incidentally, if you look at source 13, the next to last Mishnah in the 10 chapters of Psachim is Mishnah 8, the Ein Maftir Achar Pesach Afi Koman. That's the one which is all the way at the end. And the things afterwards in the Mishnah deal with things of Tum'ah afterwards, which have nothing to do with Pesach, which is really the laws of the next day. If you look in the Tosefta, what comes right after Ein Maftirna Chapesach Afi Koman, then it's great. Because what does it tell you right afterwards? How you're obligated to learn Hilchot HaPesach. Which means you see within the answer to the wise son, in the teaching of the four sons, a focus on Hilchot HaPesach, the wise son, we're teaching him the laws of Pesach. On the other hand, let's go back to the Mishnah right now. The Mishnah, if in fact it is questions by the wise son, what's the answer which is given? I'm back on the first source again. Or either the first source or the second source. Either one. He asks about the law. He asks about the halachot. He asks about Pesach, Matzah, Umoror. And what's the answer which is given? Avadimayinu. Why is that answer given? Which means this is my proof that the Manishtana is the questions of the wise son. Because what's the answer which is given to the wise son in the Chumash? Avadim Hayinu L'Paro L'Mitzrayim. So if Avadim Hayinu is the answer to the wise son, then it fits in perfectly that that's the answer which is utilized at this point in the Haggadah, because that's the wise son who would have asked these questions. Which means, what were the questions asked in the Chumash? Ma ha'idut v'ha... Sorry. How is that translated into the Haggadah? Which means, why are all these things that we're doing? That gets translated into Matzah, right? Moror, Pesach, right? Dipping, which means, why are we doing these things? Which means, what the Mishnah did is it took the formula which is found in Dvarim, and it plugs in questions to fit into that formula. What answer does it give? It gives the same answer which is found in Dvarim, which therefore should convince all of us that in fact, the four questions are the questions of the wise child. What's important now? The questions are all surrounding what? Hilchot HaPesach. And what is the answer that we're giving to him? The answer that we're giving is Sipur. And that seems to be what the Mishnah does over here. And I'll come back again and say, and what does Rabbi Gamliel now come and say? He says, hold it a second, but you have to make sure that you also explained those halachot, because that's also part of the Sipur. Meaning you can't have Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim and only talk about freedom and slavery and things like that. At some point, you also have to talk about ritual, and you need to talk about Pesach, Matzah, Umar, or you've missed the point. And that's Rabbi Gamliel is coming back and responding to the earlier answer, or the answer of Avadim Meyinu. He's saying that's good, but you also have to explain the things, because otherwise you would have missed. And by the way, if you look at all of the questions, which are actually three sons, right? The three questions of the three sons who ask them, all the answers in the Chumash, all the questions are questions regarding law, right? If you take a look at the, again, back in the Mechilta, in source number 11, the Rasha says, Ma havoda zot lechem, what's his question is about? His question is about Korban Pesach, it's about law. What's the answer in the Chumash which is given to that child? Look at source number 7. Pasuk Kavav. Vayaki Yomer Lechem Benechem, Avodazot Lechem, Pasuk Kavzain, Source 7, Pasuk 27. Vamartem, Zevach Pesach Ulashem, Asher Pasach Abatei Bnei Yisrael, B'Mitzrayim, B'Nekvo, Et Mitzrayim, Vat Batenu Hitzil. That's the Passover offering, that was the bottom of page 2. That's the Passover offering, but explains Pesach, why, what is it? And then it weaves the narrative into it, because God passed over the homes of the Jews when he smote the Egyptians in Egypt. If you look at the question of the so-called simple son, the She'en L'day Elishol, is source number 8, V'igadat L'vincha B'yomahu, B'avor Zes Hashem Li B'mitzrayim, Pasuk Yudal there, V'yaki Yishal, source 8, Pasuk Yudal, V'yaki Yishal Chab B'ncha Macha Lemor, and he could ask you, Mazot, that's the unsophisticated question of the simple son, but it seems to be, again, focusing on law, in the context here of law, what do you say to him? You again tell him, Sipur. Which means, You tell the story of how God took us out. Now, I want to remind you all of one important thing, and then maybe this will make more sense. Pesach night is supposed to be a night of questions and answers. According to this, the questions that we keep saying are questions which are based upon law. Why are we doing this? What are we doing? What's the reason for it? What are all these mitzvot? And what does the answer constantly be? Again, on the Chumash level, what is the answer constantly? It's all ta'amei ha-mitzvot, and all comes in what we call sipur, explaining not technical halacha, but it all seems to be going into why we're doing things. But if both the questions and the answers are integral parts of the Passover Seder, and now we've learned that they're both important, which means I can't just have answers, I also have questions as well, even if I'm sitting by myself. Somebody's in the army and has guard duty during the Seder. He should be sitting there by himself, asking the questions and giving the answers. But we find now that they're both part of the Seder, both the questions that have to do with halacha, and that's part of the Seder, and the answers that have to do with the Sipur, and that's part of the Seder, which means both of these become elements. But this tension between the halacha and the Sipur, I think you see it, and there were generations where the sources that we saw in the Tosefta, for example, that focused much more on the halacha, and we find that our Haggadah did not choose to use those sources. Our Haggadah rather chose to use sources that focused in terms of the response on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim to make sure it didn't only become a discussion on law, but it also had to have elements of the narrative of leaving Egypt as well. Yeah. Right.
He, your child.
Right.
It doesn't matter what he is. And then Chazal, Chachamim, I don't know at what stage, they started categorizing children. You know, Chacham, Me'inei, Tam, Rasha. And I, as an educator, find this disturbing.
Okay, but I'll explain. You, as an educator, also know that you need to teach different children in different ways. Right, you don't have one lesson, and that's the one lesson for every single class, no matter who's in the class and who's in front of you. You don't have one explanation for everyone.
You don't categorize children.
No, you don't. You don't necessarily. It's not categorized. You don't stigmatize a child necessarily. That's really the issue. But over here, what it's telling you is that you need to educate the child according to their own different ways. What it's noticing over here, once you compare this teaching and the pasuk in Perek Yud Gimel and Shemot, and the pasuk in Perek Yud Bet and Shemot, and you look at all of them together, you realize that the formulations of the questions are different. And the Gemara then, or the Mechilta, and the Yerushalmi then come to the conclusion that there are different types of questions which are asked, and therefore the educator needs to know how to respond to the different types of questions. So, and again, it's not telling you to take every child in your room and say, okay, you're going to be the wicked one tonight, you'll be the wise one tonight, and so on. That's not what it's telling you. But as the educator, I need to be sensitive to respond.
Children, when they see that, they start to wonder, who am I? As a child, am I the evil person?
So tell them, tell them that...
My kid's a big lady. That's not the
point. No, still, tell them that all of us are all four of them at different times. Sometimes we're incredibly smart, and sometimes we're terribly wicked. Sometimes we're simplistic, and sometimes we don't know what to ask. Anyway, ladies, maybe I'll see you on Monday. Either way, next Thursday I have a class. And if you want, I'll give you a lot of homework to do. But Monday, what time is it on Monday? What time is it on Monday? 10:25. You just come. Anyway, kasher b'sameach. It's free.